Support for Prairie Public is provided by LiveWire, a provider of live event audio, video, lighting, staging, and streaming services for events, conferences, and meetings across the Prairie region and around the country. More information at livewirenow.com.
Happy Monday. Welcome to today's edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. We hope you had a great weekend, and if you're a baseball fan like I am, this is your season. Playoffs start tomorrow. I wish the Cubs weren't in it, but hey, it was on this day in 1954 that Willie Mays made the catch. And the first big league game I ever saw was the Giants against the Cardinals in 1971. Bob Gibson was on the mound. Willie Mays was in center field, and I'll always treasure that memory. It was a game that featured five Hall of Famers, including Gibson, Gaylord Perry, Mays, Willie McCovey, and Ted Simmons. I wish we could talk about baseball 24/7, but let's get on to today's show. And in the second half, we're spotlighting Cinema 100. That's Bismarck's long-running community film series. We'll preview October's lineup from U.S. Indies to a Chinese feature to a documentary and more, all for just $15 for the entire series. Welcome to Main Street. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and I'm excited to dive into the work of the Furniture Mission of the Red River Valley and Jordan McCormick's, their executive director. Over the last few years, the organization has made remarkable strides in addressing furniture insecurity by receiving donations of gently used furniture and redistributing them to families in crisis. We've served over 2,700 families, given out more than 35,000 pieces of furniture, and logged 22,000 volunteer hours here with your colleagues since 2020. Those are impressive numbers. Welcome to Main Street.
Yeah, thank you.
I'd like to learn more about why your organization exists and how it operates and the impacts it's had. So let's start with your story, or the story,
sure,
of the Furniture Mission of the Red River Valley. Can you share the origin?
Yeah, absolutely. So we got our start from a small group of volunteers. Really, it started with Everett Van Engelenhoven, who was a volunteer with the Red Cross. And in his service with the Red Cross, he was dispatched to support a family who had had a fire and lost everything, even lost a child in the fire. Yeah, and he got them connected to a furniture bank in Sioux Falls, which was his first interaction with that type of thing. And he was so impressed with not only just that service, but what it meant for the family to get back on their feet. He came back to this community and said, "Who's doing this? This is pretty incredible." And so he met with some local nonprofit leaders, you know, people at places like DMF and other just larger nonprofits, and said, "Who's doing this? And will there be value in it?" Everyone said, "If you could start it tomorrow, that'd be great." And that's kind of how we were born. He started calling some friends and said, "Hey, I've got a crazy idea. Would you like to do this with me?"
We've all heard of food insecurity.
Yeah.
I've never heard of furniture insecurity, but it sure sounds reasonable.
It's the same concept, right? It means essentially that if you don't have something, you don't have the ability to afford to purchase it. Or if you have something and it breaks or goes away in any way, shape, or form, you don't have the money to replace it.
How prevalent do we think the issue is in our area?
You know, that's kind of the magic question. It would take a pretty significant study, but we know that our community is growing rapidly. We're seeing more and more demands on all sorts of social services. Honestly, when our founders started Furniture Mission, the idea was we're going to do some good, we're going to help some people, but this can't be that big of an issue. And so the plan was to help a few people, shut it down, go play golf, right? And that's not the case. We have continued to see requests for our service grow year over year, and it's not slowing down anytime soon.
Jordan, this is a faith-based mission. Mm-hmm. How does that help shape your identity and your mission and your operations?
Absolutely, and I love that you brought that up. I know that was one of the things that drew me to it. But I think everyone has the same idea as to what that means for Furniture Mission. We are faith-based, but we're very interested in letting our actions do the talking. We don't want to tell it to you. We want you to see what we do and know, like, we are people of faith. That means that we are here to serve anyone who walks through our door, we are here to prop up our neighbor and love them and pray for them and want the best for them, even in moments where they're either in crisis or challenge. We serve a lot of people who are getting second chances. All that means to us is that they are worthy of receiving our service and our compassion and our respect.
Walk me through the process, Jordan.
Sure.
From donation to distribution. How do donations get accepted, stored, and then matched?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so it starts with, we get a lot of donated goods from local individuals. I think, like you said, we have surpassed 40,000 pieces of donated goods. Actually, as of today, we just passed 45,500 pieces of donated furniture since 2020, which is outstanding. So we get individual donors, but we also get them from hotels, colleges, for kind of larger bulk donations of goods, which are extremely helpful. When we have more inventory, we can open up more client access. We either have things dropped off with us at our warehouse, or we do have a pickup service that runs Tuesday and Thursday afternoons every week. We've got two trucks and we send them out with our drivers. And so we pick up in the community, bring it back here. We get it processed in our warehouse, which means we get it tagged. If it needs to be cleaned up a little bit, we'll clean it up, make sure it gets organized and is safe to use and is going to serve somebody with dignity. And then we have it available for our clients when they come in on the client appointment days. And so the pathway to donated good to being in a new home, if we get something on a Tuesday, it could be in a new home by Wednesday.
How do you make that match?
So we sit down and we talk about spaces. So we serve a wide spectrum of clients. And so we'll serve like an individual older guy coming to us from the VA. And they maybe don't need a ton of items, but they need some specific items, right? I'm thinking of a instance recently where we had a veteran who had some injuries to one of his legs, which made it really hard for him to get up and down. And he was sleeping on an air mattress at the time. And so we needed a taller bed that allowed him to get in and out comfortably, and then also a lift chair. And so he just needed a couple of things, but they were really important things. We're going to sit down, we're going to have that conversation, we're going to say, hey, we're going to take our inventory and we're going to do the very best we can to solve as many problems as we can. And we pair them with one of our volunteers. One of our volunteer jobs is to walk around specifically with the individuals that come in. And we want these people to pick these items themselves. We see there's huge power in that. And everyone has their own taste. And so we want them to be able to have that choice, because oftentimes we're serving people that haven't had a lot of choice. And we see the value in taking that time. Those volunteers are also going to tell me about the ages of the people in the space. For instance, if you've got a couple of toddlers in the home, we're probably going to discourage things like glass top side tables or anything that might be a little more dangerous to littler hands. But we want to talk through that with them so that when they get to choose those items, they're literally starting a new chapter. They're stepping into a new space in their life, and maybe they're excited, but maybe they're terrified. And so the fact that they get to choose these pieces that are going to go along this journey with them is so powerful.
Jordan, you told me just a moment ago that folks help you when furniture comes in to maybe do a little light refresh.
Yeah.
Who are they?
They are our volunteer team. I have the honor of being the only staff person here, and so I get to work alongside our volunteer teams. I mentioned our volunteers who work directly with clients to be able to support them picking out furniture. We've got a team of volunteers that work in our refurbished wood shop area. We've converted a small corner of our warehouse to a workshop, and so they get to do small to medium-sized repairs on furniture that comes in to make sure it's safe and make sure it looks good. One of the things that we've learned is, we're here to provide critical need items. Are we gonna furnish your dream home? Maybe not. But if we can get you really excited about a couple of pieces so that you can feel better about having people over in your space, saying things like, look at how beautiful this table is or this dresser or whatever it is, that's kind of our goal. And it's pretty exciting.
What are the biggest logistical, I guess, or operational challenges that you see day in and day out? Boy, I can think of everything from volume of donations to weather. Just probably a lot of hurdles there.
All of it. And so starting with, which is our biggest expense every year, which is warehouse space. If you want to do this at a scale that we're starting to do it at, you need warehouse space to be able to do this the right way. You have to be able to store inventory, but we also have to be able to function in the space to be able to select items, get it in and out. Right now we're turning over 300 to 350 pieces every week. And so we have a lot of stuff coming and going. And so one, it's furniture. We're seeing a lot of thrift stores and other types of those types of organizations moving away from furniture because it just takes up too much square footage and you can get more revenue out of smaller items in that same space. And I don't know if you've tried to sell a couch on Craigslist or on Marketplace or something recently, it's not the best. And so, you know, that's just a logistical piece in and of itself. That means our volunteers, we have to have the people to be able to load furniture and move furniture. Now our volunteer team are mostly retired seniors. And so it's all based on do what you can when you can. And we've got carts and...
How do you recruit and train your volunteers?
Oh, I don't know. Every way we can. You know, we've got a great team. And one of the things that we're just starting to do now is try to connect with local just organizations of younger people. So fraternities, sororities, people whose workplaces offer them paid volunteer time. And so we've just launched an online sign up platform for shifts that makes it easier for those types of opportunities.
And you'll do all the training.
Yeah, absolutely. Come on in. We'll show you how it works. So what we do is not overly complicated. It's pretty simple stuff, but we want to make sure we're doing it the right way. And at the heart of all of it is that we're treating people with respect. We're making this a space where somebody can come in and be who they are, because our job is to meet people where they are.
We're enjoying our conversation with Jordan McCormick. He's the executive director of the Furniture Mission of the Red River Valley. When you get things,
yeah,
some of it's probably great and some of it probably isn't. How do you handle that? How do you make sure that what you get and goes out is good stuff?
That is a great question. And we're doing that better today than we ever have. It starts with knowing what it is we're looking for. I think when we first started, we felt like we had to say yes to a lot of things because we really wanted to make good first impressions with furniture donors and with the community at large. And ultimately learned that if we say yes to everything, we are just making a lot of work for us. We now know that we are serving families with critical need furniture items, and likely they're moving into smaller spaces. And so we used to say yes to hutches and curio cabinets and these large ornate china cabinets or really large desks. And as it turns out, people starting over don't need those types of things. And so that starts with making sure we've got all that information like concise and available on our website. When people are calling in to make appointments, our people who are answering that phone know what we're looking for and can kind of talk through that. When it comes to condition of items, we want them to be gently used. That means something different to everyone, we've sure learned. And so anecdotally, we like to think of it as if you'd be comfortable having this piece in your daughter or granddaughter's first apartment, chances are it's going to be good enough for us. And so that's kind of how we have that. Our drivers, when we go pick up furniture, they have the same kind of criteria. They have received the same training and understand what we're looking for. And so they may say, you know what, I don't think this is going to really help the families we're here to help.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, exactly. And gently as best sure you can. We want to say thanks for thinking of us. You know, I think there are always the situations where people maybe see us as an opportunity to be free drunk hauling, right? To be able to just take some stuff away that they just don't even care about. They're less concerned about our mission, more concerned about getting their garage clean. And we're pretty good about understanding and seeing those in advance now. But when you serve a community, you are there for the whole community, right?
When you think about the nearly 3,000 now families that you've supported, that mm-hmm you've served, are there particular stories that stand out?
Oh, yeah.
Jordan,
absolutely.
Can you share?
Of course. I think I always think of this one. So I have a set of twins at home and then a third. But it was a mom who came in and she had five kids, but in that was a set of twins. And so like we visited like instantly. It's something about being a parent of multiples that you're in like a secret club. And so like we visited for a while and she was working with one of our volunteers who is just the best. And she was very focused on getting furniture for her kids, which I think is what moms do, right? What's what parents do. And so we spend about an hour with the family, picking out furniture, talking about what they're looking for. And so our volunteer kept asking, what about you? what are you sleeping on? And she just said, oh, I'm just worried about my kids. I'm just worried about my kids. By the end of the visit, we had kind of worn her down enough to say, hey, what does your sleeping look like? And she was sleeping on a cot. And so we were able to make it okay for her to accept a bed for herself so that she could have something proper to sleep on.
Maybe this goes without saying, you don't charge for your furniture.
No. So we want to be a low barrier solution, which means we don't charge the families and we don't charge the agencies who refer them to us to submit that referral. So we don't pass that burden on to anyone. Yeah, all free. We do ask families to be able to provide transportation to haul the items away, which a lot of agencies will have a solution for or some sort of fix for as well.
You talked earlier about understanding more clearly what kind of furniture you really need to take and what you may say no to. Any other big lessons that you've learned along the way?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you know who you are, it makes it easier to know who you aren't. And that's where we're not interested in duplicating efforts. So for instance, that's made it easier for us to not consider branching into like kitchenware type items or small appliances, because we have a lot of thrift stores that do that really well already. And there are a lot of pathways for people who are just gonna get restarted to be able to access some of that stuff at a reduced rate or for free. So that tells us we don't have to do that. We have seen absolutely that we're filling a gap in services when it comes to furniture. And so that's kind of where we feel like we make our biggest impact.
Looking ahead.
Yeah.
What are your goals in the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, 3 to 5 years. Like we talked about, we get to expand our space, which is going to allow us to solve some of those logistical things that we just mentioned, which what do we do when somebody says, hey, it's a hotel, and they go, we have 65 nightstands for you and you have to come tomorrow. And we go, whoa, okay, we're going to do the best we can. Having more space allows us to accommodate things like that and makes it more accessible for us to be able to give the clients immediately. I think our goal is to, we look at it kind of at a weekly thing. We've had a weekly average of households served as high as 18. I think immediately in the next 1 to 2 years, we'd like to see that be 20 or more. What that'll do over the course of a year is get us past the 1,000 households threshold for service volume. But we're also interested, it's not about numbers, right? For instance, we had a few clients this week have some challenges with just getting to their appointment. And so we served 14 clients out of 20 that we had scheduled. And it's really easy to say, we missed an opportunity that we had all these other appointments that didn't get fulfilled, but we still helped 14 families get access to furniture. And we know that on average, each family is taking between 15 and 18 pieces. So that's the thing. We need to focus on better, not necessarily bigger, but we also know that the demand dictates bigger as well. And so that's where we need to do that. So having an increase in space is going to help us do that. We need to grow a team. We can't continue to grow and have one staff person, even though I've got incredible volunteers. There's so much more to do, right? And so we just turned 5. We feel like, we're kind of that toddler who's learning to run. We can get there. It's not pretty all the time, but we are just knowing that there's so much more to expand in the community, and more staff are going to help us do that.
How can folks in the Red River Valley then best support your mission beyond donating furniture?
Sure. Yeah, we do everything we do with volunteer support. And so that means if you're somebody who has time on your hands and want to pour into this and can come, we've got people that come every Wednesday, that's wonderful. If that's not you, that's okay too. If you work at a place that has 8 hours of volunteer time a quarter or something like that, get on our schedule. We'd love to see you. We'll train you up real quick, and it's really easy for you to see how what you're doing is going to add value to a local family. We do everything that we do on local gifts and grants. We don't receive any sort of subsidies from the city or the state or from the federal level. We do all of this just by the generosity of our community.
But you're also looking for gifts along the way.
Oh my goodness. It allows us to be able to serve more and do more. We get asked all the time, how do you keep the lights on? Well, we earn support through our local gifts and grants and people who see what we're doing and believe in it.
You ever had to say no, that the volume of what you can do can't quite support the folks who really need your assistance?
Yeah, absolutely, which is hard. I know the group of volunteers that started this didn't start this to say no, but there is something about having it be the right time. And so we've had to say qualified no's, which is we can't do it in the way that you are asking us to do it today, but we can take this step now, right? And so that'll look like, can we absorb this whole thing? No. But can we do this small piece today and then grow into something bigger as we have more bandwidth?
Jordan, are there misconceptions that are out there or things maybe the public doesn't understand about your work that you wish people knew a little bit more about?
Yeah, I think we're still a newer organization. And so at least one time a week, we get somebody that shows up to a warehouse and they say, oh, I'm looking for a dresser. And we're not a store. We don't have a regular retail component. We're a furniture bank and we get furniture, we give furniture. That's what we do. That's our bread and butter. And so that's just an education piece that goes along with it. I think we covered that we don't charge the families. We don't charge the referral agencies. That's not a burden that we pass along to anyone because just with the state of today, other furniture banks do have a structure set up where if an organization wants to refer a family to receive their service, there is a fee associated. That's a thing that other places do, and it creates a more sustainable model for them. But we didn't feel good about that. Not today. I'm not saying not ever, but do we want to pass more burden on to places like Churches United, YWCA, F5, Red Cross? I think everyone is trying to figure out how to do more with less, and it just didn't seem like the right thing.
There's someone who is listening,
yeah,
and thinking, I could probably use their help. I don't know. Told we're supposed to take care of ourselves.
Sure.
All of those things. What would you tell that person?
So what we would do is we would encourage you to have just call in if you want to talk through it, and we'll kind of talk you through the process. On our website, we've got our list of referring agencies. We want people to go through those pathways for a couple of reasons. One, we're not the experts at whatever the circumstance is, but those experts exist in our community. They know how to support somebody who is coming out of a shelter, for whatever reason, who is experiencing natural disaster, who is getting on their feet. After coming out of incarceration, going through treatment, whatever it is, those experts exist. And then they're going to be able to connect you to other resources in a really powerful way, better than we can. That's why we want that referral to come through one of those pathways. So we would have you take a look at that list, see if any of those kind of speak to your circumstance, and then go from there. One of our rules at Furniture Mission is that we don't have rules, we have guidelines. And so when you work with people, people don't often fit into the boxes that we create, right? And so that's why we're here to serve. We're here to serve first. So that's where we want to start. But if you need some help, we want to help you get there. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to join you on your program today. This is something that it just makes sense, I think, any way you look at it. And from helping families directly, it is a huge help to be able to have these critical need items, a table to do homework at. It's hard to have a great day at work or school if you're not sleeping in a bed. Even just kind of the smaller stuff that are the creature comforts that allow you to live like a human make a huge difference. For the agencies that send us those referrals, we have gotten the feedback many times that they don't have to have their really valuable caseworkers, social workers, peer support specialists, spending their time sourcing furniture from Marketplace or Craigslist or wherever, because we exist. They just have to make an appointment with us. And then the last thing is we give second chances. We're part of giving second chances to a lot of people, but it's also second chances for a lot of furniture. Not a lot of places are accepting furniture. A lot of stuff is destined to the curb or the landfill. Even if we have to put a little work into it, it means that this furniture gets to add value to a new family for years to come, and it's staying out of our landfill. So it's just a win-win every way you look at it. If you want to support us, you can learn more at furnituremissionrrv.org, and you can do monetary gifts, furniture, or you can sign up to be a volunteer there.
Jordan McCormick is the executive director of the Furniture Mission of the Red River Valley.
Yeah.
Congratulations on your work and best wishes.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us on Main Street. come on Main Street, Cinema 100, it's Bismarck's long-running community film series, and it starts Thursday. We'll have a preview. That's ahead on Main Street, right after this news. Main Street continues, and we're talking about Cinema 100. It's an organization in Bismarck that brings us a wonderful array of different films. We're going to get into their schedules here in just a minute. This is the 52nd rendition of Cinema 100. With me visiting are Brian Polacek and Anita Casey Reed. To both, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you for having us here.
Thank you.
Let's rewind the time machine. Give us first the history of Cinema 100.
Cinema 100 started in 1973. There was a group of us that wanted to have access to all of the movies of the world that wouldn't normally come to regular theaters. And so we founded Cinema 100, which actually had started in the 50s and then became inactive after a while. But the 73 was the big year that a group of us looked through catalogs and we ordered films, and the reel came in a canister, whatever it's called, and somebody picked it up, and we showed the films up at Bismarck State College. And we've had our own history and evolution since then. But I think The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, the French film, was possibly the first film. But we used to... I think it was,
and that's why it was one of the ones we had when we were having our 50th anniversary celebration a few years ago.
So we're moving forward now. Why is it important for a community like Bismarck to have a series like this? Why does it matter?
Why don't you start that,
Anita? I think there are a couple of reasons, and Brian and I and a lot of the other folks who are involved in the volunteer work of Cinema 100 have talked about this quite a bit, because you can sit down with Netflix and Hulu and this and that and the other thing, and it is almost overwhelming. And there are so many distractions when you're sitting at home, and there's always laundry that needs to be folded, and there's always the siren call of the cell phone. And there is something about sitting in a theater and taking a chance on a movie, and you don't know if it's going to change your life or if it's going to be something you really don't like, or if it is going to be something that brings you a new perspective about the world. And that's one of the great things about Cinema 100, is because we get such a broad range of things in. We're so fortunate having the relationship we have with the Grand. That we're able to provide something for everybody. It may not be for everybody, but we have something for everybody.
Along with the series that we sponsor every year in October and then in January till March, I would say that we have three roles. One is to encourage people to think about the role of film in their lives, or in film in history. Film history, the technology that's changed, and the way we access films and how we make choices about them. Then we've also provided funds to people who are making a film, various film projects. And then there's the series itself. And I have a little list of four things that I think that Cinema 100 provides. A curated film series of interesting films. All of these films are going to have good reviews. They're interesting. And there are five curated films. And number two, you're going to see them in a very high-quality theater setting. I mean, the Grand 22 Theaters, from my point of view, is one of the nicest theaters maybe in the world.
Wow.
Because not all theaters are that nice, you know. Yeah. And number three, at a very low cost of $15 for five films, and you have an opportunity for what I call a learning community, because the people can visit with each other. There's an educational, conversational learning side to what we do.
Tell me how that works.
The conversation. Yeah. Well, the very fact that when people come, they purchase a membership for the season, and there is already visiting. When you go to of the theater, you're not necessarily, and you go to the box office and you purchase your ticket, you're not necessarily talking with other people about, well, what are you going to see? That's not really appropriate.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know that I've ever really had a conversation with who I went to the theater
exactly.
with.
And then when the movie is over, people are walking out and they recognize each other. They might start immediately, well, what'd you think of that? Wow, that was very disturbing. Or that was the best movie. I just can't believe what I just... There are conversations afterwards as well. We always give out a review of the film that some people read beforehand, but most people read afterwards. Then, what did this person have to say about this particular... What do I have to say about it? So, yes, the conversations are built, and it's part of the etiquette that it's okay to visit with somebody who's not really a personal friend, but, well, what'd you think of the movie last time? Sure. And the person says, that has to be the worst movie I've ever seen.
I think one of the recent ones, we had Red Rocket, which was by the same gentleman who did Anora. So it had a lot of sexually explicit material in it. And as we're walking out of there, here's a gentleman in his Carhartt jacket and his camo hat, and he said, well, that was something.
Yeah.
And it was just, Brian always says that we have one of the most adventurous audiences mm-hmm. in the country in some respects, because they don't necessarily know walking in what's going to happen, but they're willing to take a chance, and they're willing to go where we want. Where you think we right. think they might have a great time.
And so in this world of film,
yes,
you have to make decisions about what to bring to us. How do you do that?
A lot of lists and a lot of writing on whiteboards and trying to figure out. We don't want them all to be downers, so we try to have a mix of emotional feelings, as well as we really like to have a mix of locations and genres. And honestly, this October series seems like a really great epitome of that sort of thing. We're starting out with an American independent kind of heartwarming comedy. Bob Trevino Likes It, starring John Leguizamo and Barbie Ferreira, who many people may know from Euphoria. Then we're going.
And this is October 2nd.
This is October 2nd. And then the next week, we shift into a very visually oriented documentary called Architecton about concrete and stone and what these things mean to our history and how we live and how we work. It's by a Russian filmmaker, but it's in English and Italian, and it's very visually sweeping all around the world. And then on the 16th, we go straight into a Chinese film, Caught by the Tides, which was shot over the course of 20 years. And it's nominally, it's a story about a woman looking for her lost love, but it's very much also about the changes from that time, going from the early 2000s till now in an area of China where the Three Gorges Dam is submerging communities, forcing people to leave. You've got this migration from rural areas to city areas, and you've got sort of this human context for these sweeping forces of history and how humans are kind of caught in these tides of other forces, which I think is going to be fascinating. It did really well at Cannes this year. Then we have an American independent drama by a first-time filmmaker, a woman named Raven Jackson, called All Dirt Roads, Taste of Salt, which is about a young woman growing up in Mississippi and is very impressionistic, very much about family and community, but also a lot of tactile, kind of very Terrence Malick, if you think that sort of thing. And so, you know, you have things where you have established Hollywood people, you have first-time people. Oh, and then, of course, we're ending up with Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, which is this animated, just fun piece by Jenny Slade. Some people may know her from Parks and Rec or from her stand-up comedy. And it's just going to be fun and sweet. And one thing I certainly enjoy about Cinema 100, especially when my kids were younger, is that we usually have at least one or two films that you can take your kids to. Both Architecton and Marcel the Shell with Shoes On are rated G. Mm-hmm. And there are just so many things, so many opportunities to open yourself up and have a different experience that you never know what's going to happen. It may end up being your favorite film of all time, and you won't know it until you get there.
Cinema 100 begins October 2nd in Bismarck. What time and what is the location of the theater?
Our films are shown at the Grand 22 Theater in Bismarck. And they're always shown on Thursdays, 2nd, 9th, 16th, 23, 30, I guess that's how it goes. Mm-hmm. And they're shown at twice, 3 o'clock and 6 o'clock. So you have those two choices for time.
And if you can only make three of the four, it's okay. If you can only make a couple, that's just fine. Mm-hmm. For someone who has never been, they know others have been doing this for years and years and years, but they've never come. What's your best invitation?
Come to the theater, and you're going to pay a very low price of $15 for these five films, and you simply buy a membership. If you only want to see the one because you've heard something about it, you can buy the ticket at the box office at the regular price. So,
concession stands are open?
I was about to say, that's what I always say, is that because you're paying less money for the film, you have more money to spend on popcorn. Think of it this way. It's economically feasible.
Right. I do want to mention, make sure that as part of our educational function, and we'd like to raise questions about the history of films, that in North Dakota, there are 120 theaters that are operating in various cities. And Bismarck has one, and Fargo, I think, has three, and other towns. But the oldest theater that is still running in North Dakota is in Lisbon, North Dakota. It was originally started in 1911. That's 114 years ago.
Awesome.
And they've been continuously operating. They are in the running for the oldest, longest continuously running theater in America. There are two other theaters that are claiming for that. But I talked with one of the people who has owned that theater in the past, and I asked him, what's the first film that they showed? And it's a silent film, of course, called Little Nemo. And it's about a person who is a cartoonist who tells his friends he's going to make pictures move. And so it ends with animation. It's one of the first animated films. And I thought, I'm going to watch this. And there I go to the internet, and there's Little Nemo. And I would encourage everybody who's listening to us today, come to our film series, which you're going to have the state-of-the-art, the highest level of films, and at a wonderful theater. Watch Little Nemo. And think, and maybe go to the North Dakota Film Society website, and they have a picture and a little information about every theater that's operating in North Dakota at the present time.
Can I ask each of you, Anita, let me have you go first.
Sure.
Why did you become so interested in film?
Oh, boy.
Well, I grew up in a small town in Iowa. I only moved to Bismarck a mere 23 years ago. And I would say that films have always been a way to connect to the other people in my life around me who are watching them with me, you know, first my parents and my friends and now my kids and that sort of thing. But also to be able to connect to people and places and events that would have been completely and are completely outside of my realm of experience. And good film, like all good art, is a way to bring in so much empathy about other people and the way our world is and the way our world should be. And I think, especially now, it's the kind of thing we want to encourage, this kind of connection to others, both in real life and in terms of being able to relate to somebody you may never meet, but you can feel the connection of being another human just trying to make it through this life.
Brian, how about you?
Well, I go back to my childhood, too. I grew up in a farming community in Kansas, and there was a theater at Belleville, Kansas, which is the county seat of Republic County. And I think it was the emotional power of film. So there I am as a five-year-old with my family. My parents went to the movies almost every weekend. We would go to see a double feature. So, and my parents were resisting television because they wanted to go out into the world, and we would have supper someplace. And I was very emotionally just, it was so powerful, the music, the drama, the horses running, and the love, and you know, it was just so powerful. And I recall that when I was paying 10 cents to go to the movies, and then when I became 12, it slipped up to 25 cents. And I thought, oh, man, this is the end of the world, you know, that it was more expensive. But I want to share another memory that in the various small towns, and there were some towns that were like 200 people, in the summer, they would arrange with a person who would bring a projector and a film and show it on a screen that they had built in their public park. And for me, one of the greatest memories I think of my entire life was going to these movies with the people of my community, watching. We saw a lot of Francis the Talking Mule and Ma and Pa Kettle films, but I also saw the Benny Goodman story, the Glenn Miller story, a film that was set in India with the royal troops or whatever they are. It was tremendously powerful stuff.
Do either of you remember the first movie that you saw?
The first movie I saw, I believe, was The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes with, I believe it was Kurt Russell back when he was a teen actor. Our town had not only an indoor movie theater, but at that point, very young, they had a drive-in movie theater as well. And so that was one of my first drive-in experiences. And then I'd say one of my other very early fond film memories was when Star Trek, The Wrath of Khan came out, and our small town theater was overwhelmed with the number of kids who wanted to go to the movie, and they let us all sit on the floor and in the aisles to be able to allow everybody to see it, which is completely not up to code, but was just so much fun. And it was everybody you went to school with, and you had this experience together. And that's really the thing about Cinema 100, is having this experience together.
What was your first movie, Brian?
One of the first that I really remember was they showed all the King's Men in one of these small towns, and when I was probably 5 years old, and I might have seen other movies before that, but I remember there's a scene in All the King's Men where the state is not taking care of the infrastructure and the buildings, and these children are in a grade school, and the stairway collapses, and I still have this clear memory of that. It was very early. I
must have been scary for a 5 year old. Yeah.
Yes. All of us have experienced movies. There are children who have seen The Lion King 500 times, and they saw it when they were 3, and now they're 30 or so. But
first movie I recall was my mom took my brother and I to Bambi.
Oh, okay, yes.
At our local theater, mm-hmm. the Acme Theater, where my mom, as a young person, went to movies, where my mom was at a movie when the movie stopped and the person came up and said, America's been attacked at Pearl Harbor. Mm. This theater has so much history in my town, like theaters all across the country do. Cinema 100, it starts this coming Thursday. How do people get more information, and how can they get tickets?
Please come to our Facebook page. Look for Cinema 100, and we usually post about the movies week by week. When you come, the movies start at 3 and at 6. There aren't previews, so it starts
no
at
cartoons?
3, at 6. One of these days, we're going to have to look into that.
I miss those, by the way.
But I want to warn people the first week, because it is us volunteers at a card table selling the season tickets. So there is a little bit of a line the first week or two, so people should kind of plan accordingly. If they want to buy popcorn first and then get into line, that is perfectly acceptable and a great idea.
$15, all movies every Thursday in October, Cinema 100. Again, tell folks the location.
Our films are shown at the Grand 22 Theater in Bismarck, and if you don't know how to get there, just use your GPS.
The modern technology will get us to the movie just like we've always enjoyed them. Anita Casey Reed and Brian Polacek, thank you for your work with Cinema 100, and thank you for joining us again on Main Street.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Nodak Insurance Company, serving North Dakota for over 75 years, providing insurance products from auto, home, farm, and business. Details at nodakins.com.
This is Dakota Datebook for September 29th. The Threshers Are Coming is an aptly named collection of poems by North Dakotan Clarence Larson. It shares memories of harvesting crops with steam threshing machines. In 1913, a threshing outfit, he writes, included 17 men, bundle stiffs and spikes, 6 grain wagons with men to shovel, and 1 big cook car with a hired man cook. As technology improved, harvesting became easier and less time-consuming. And as memories of steam threshing outfits faded into stories, North Dakotans developed a renewed interest in old threshing machines. This sparked the desire to remember, learn from, and celebrate the past through community threshing bees. On this date in 1976, the Steele County Press reported an interesting story about a group of friends who got together to harvest a few acres of oats the old-fashioned way, just for fun. Gordon Carlson had purchased and fixed up an old threshing machine. He said, "We just do it for fun, just to get together and talk and have a good time." All agreed the process was time-consuming and required much more manual labor than modern combining. The men loaded bundles of oats into hay wagons and pitched them into the machine all by hand. Threshing bees, like the Makoti Threshing Show, offer community members a chance to experience old-fashioned threshing, even if they don't own a machine. These events have grown to include antique cars and trucks, pancake breakfasts, and homemade lunches and dinners for visitors. In addition to the food and fun, people can also learn about old gas and steam threshing machines and the farming techniques of the past. The 1976 Makoti Show had over 100 units operating during the weekend. The Threshers Are Coming can still be heard at threshing bees across the state, while visitors remember Clarence Larson and the many North Dakotans who worked hard to thresh and harvest throughout the state's history. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Ashley Thronson. I'm Meryl Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting arts programming here on Prairie Public.
The Fargo Public Library presents their Fall Into Jazz concerts featuring local jazz artists Saturdays, October 4th through the 25th, starting at 4 p.m. at the downtown Main Library. More information at fargolibrary.org.
A picture of a girl trapped in the rubble of her building in Gaza caught the attention of an American surgeon. That picture ended up in Time magazine, and the surgeon answered the call for help when she was at risk of losing her leg.
This picture saved my leg and the future.
We speak with both of them on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Prairie Public is a listener-supported statewide radio network. We cover everywhere in North Dakota, from the Bakken to Bismarck, Wishick to West Fargo. But we wouldn't be able to bring you NPR News, news from the Prairie region, and all the great cultural and music programs you enjoy without the help of listeners like you. And so we would like to send a special thank you out to our sustaining members, whose generous monthly contributions keep Prairie Public's radio stations and online streams humming along with quality programs and independent, fact-based journalism. Thank you, sustainers. We simply can't do this without you.
And that wraps up this Monday's Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are deeply grateful that you've spent time with us. Tomorrow on Main Street, a timely conversation about vaccines and immunizations. Essentia Health's Immunization Manager Kelsey Nefsker joins us to talk about vaccines for all ages. From protecting kids to supporting older adults, we'll cut through today's confusion, look at what's new this season, including COVID and flu shots, and talk about why science and trust matter now more than ever. That's tomorrow on Main Street, and we look forward to your joining us again.